Hey, citizens of the interweb, you have landed on A Shot and a Beer, a weekly interview podcast featuring chefs, brewers, troublemakers, and heartbreakers. Every week, we're talking food and booze with people who do it for a living. So grab a beer, pour yourself a shot, and come along for the ride. Okay, San Diego, we are back once again with the best podcast about food and beverage in town, and I can say that without fear of correction, because I think we actually are.
Well, we're definitely the best that records at the top of a mall and a comedy club.
Oh, far and away.
Absolutely.
Far and away in a comedy club. I love the qualifiers at a round table.
Just making sure nobody's going to argue.
That other voice you heard was the inimitable Matty Bird.
Hello, sir.
On the ones and twos. I have great guests today. We are hanging with the ladies once again. Sort of becoming a common theme on this show, because I think we've had all distaff guests as much as we've had regular dude guests. Today, my two guests are, first and foremost, Rosanna Peyron, the executive chef at the High Dive. How are you, Rosie?
I'm doing good. I'm excited.
And directly to my left, and that's left on your radio dial, is a lady I met as the wife of another comedian, but then I found out that she was a waitress and kind of the lead waitress, for lack of a better term. Are you a manager there?
No, not really.
Just kind of the lead waitress?
Yeah, kind of.
At the Comedy Palace. She's also married to a very, very fine comedian named Eric Knowles. Becky Knowles, how are you, Beck?
I'm doing well.
I am bouncing off the walls today because I had a big night last night.
Oh, did you? What were you up
to? I did. I went to see Purple Rain in the theater last night.
Oh. Where at?
AMC, Mission Valley. And you know what? I have to tell you, it was, for someone of my age, it was really nice to relive that music again. The music still holds up to the point where it further points out how absolutely god-awful the acting is in that movie. That the acting in that movie and the dialogue in that movie is just terrible.
Oh, man.
But the music was great. It took me way, way back. I mean, for you guys, it probably doesn't mean anything, but that was high school for me. High school and first year in the military for me.
What was that, 83,
84? 83, 84, yeah.
My parents were super young, so I grew up listening to that.
That's, oh, did you really?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember when he first came out, and we're not going to make this an old Prince episode, although we probably could. But when he first came out, it was one of those things where I'd never heard music like that before. I'd never heard that blend of rock and funk and just that big mashup that he used to do. And the music, when Purple Rain came on, everybody in the theater stood up, everybody was singing.
That's so awesome.
It was like being at a concert. It was so much fun. But God, the acting in that movie was just
really
terrible. Oh my God. It was like watching a porn movie where the music is like the sex scenes. And then there was just that additional dialogue.
Everything else was the pizza man bringing.
Yeah, yeah. Here you go. Let's talk for 5 minutes so we can get to the next fucking song.
I remember Prince has a bitchin' motorcycle in that movie.
Oh, that giant oversized purple motorcycle. Another thing I learned.
Actually, it's regular size. He's just so small.
That is true.
He's a Vespa.
That is true. The other thing I learned, every time he pulls out in that movie, he spins the back tires. So obviously Prince doesn't know how to work the throttle on his motorcycle, which is a weird thing to notice, but when you get old, you notice weird shit.
What is your favorite Prince song overall, the entire catalog?
Oh, boy. I would say it's probably a toss-up between I Would Die For You and I Can Never Take the Place of Your Man, which is later, much later. Mm. That was, I think, with the New Power Generation. Wow, I know way more about Prince than I really should.
We're all discovering that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for reals. We really are. I'm just like, holy shit, I know all this stuff.
Little Red Corvette's a great song, but that was 1999, and that was my junior year in high school, which was
1999? Oh, the song 1999.
Oh, please. I wish my junior year in high school was 1999. when I wake up every morning, 1982 rings a bell. Mm-hmm. But, it was really cool to see people standing up and singing, and it was a weirdly mixed age group. That's in awesome. There was 17, 18-year-old kids. There was people my age in there. It was really kind
of
cool.
You just reminded me of this. Comedian friend of ours, Anthony Gruber, mm-hmm. was asked to submit a bio for a show that he was on, and all he did was copy the first paragraph of Prince's Wikipedia page and replace Prince with his name. And let me tell you, that it fits. It fits really well. If you know Anthony.
Anthony Gruber and Prince's bio.
If it's innovator from Minnesota, none of those are true.
Minnesota.
Neither is he an innovator.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I guess up to this point I hadn't realized that Prince was actually a chubby white guy.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, now that we're done with my little Purple Rain vignette, why don't we get to what we typically do in this show? And it's get to know our guests a little bit. Rosie, you are, I think I met you when you were at Counterpoint?
Counterpoint.
Counterpoint. Mm-hmm. Let's get a little bio, where you started, what brought you here, how did you get to the lofty position of being the executive chef at the High Dive?
Cool. Okay. So I started in this industry pretty late in my life, somewhere around 24, 25. I did everything, dog groomed. I was a meter reader, and I hated all those jobs. And I would come home and make dinner for me and my roommates, and it was dumb shit like hamburger helper and stuff like that. And then we started throwing these parties, and my little trays of food would get better and better, and people would like come and they would eat all the food, and you know you're drunk, you don't eat, no one touches anything at first, so you're like, fuck, they don't like my shit, and then towards the end of the night, they start drinking and everything's gone. And you're like, oh, they just ate it because they were hungry now. So I went to culinary school. I went to San Diego Culinary Institute. And then my first job was at Alchemy in South Park under Ricardo. So he's my mentor. I learned so much from him. If I would have known that he would have just taken like a passionate person just with no experience, mm-hmm. I would have never went to school. I learned so much from him. I've also worked with Amy DiBiase when she was at Cosmopolitan. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Seattle. I was going to start my culinary journey in Seattle and work my way across, ending up in New York. And a day after I got to Seattle, I found out I was pregnant and had to come back. I basically lived there for a month. It was like a really expensive vacation. I had an apartment. I had two or three jobs lined up for myself. I took one. And then
that's awesome. You were like, well, fuck it, we're here.
Yeah, I might as well stay. I moved with a friend too that was also a cook, and he was like on the same journey as me, and we were like, fuck it, let's do it together. And I felt really bad that I had to leave him there. But I came back and I got my job back at Alchemy, and I started wanting to do like managerial stuff with them without asking for extra money. And those are the employees that now that I'm like, where the hell are all those people? And then it was time for me to go because I stopped learning, and that was one of my rules. If you're not learning anymore or you're not moving forward in a mm-hmm. position, then it's time to bounce and try something else.
I've actually suggested to guys that they leave the kitchens that I was in.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what? Why? Why, chef? And it's like, because I'm not teaching you anything anymore.
Yeah.
After 3 or 4 years with a single chef, you kind of learn his preferences, his style. My guys were learning how to cook like me, and that's great for me. It means I have less to do, but it's not rounding them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to if you want to be serious about it, you have to move, you have to grow, you have to see other stuff.
Yep.
So that's cool. That's a lot of chefs, young chefs especially, don't recognize when it's time to go.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things where it's like you love your team, and that sometimes that makes you stay even longer because mm-hmm. you're just like, you're there. I ended up having my kid, so I took a year off. And then I went, when I started back, I got hired at 100 Wines with Catherine Humphis. And then I worked there, and then the guys at Alchemy called me, and they were like, hey, we were looking for a kitchen manager, and it was going to pay me better. And at this point, I'm now thinking of raising my family, mm-hmm. and money, it does mean something, even though like it might have been like $11 an hour or something, but right. for me, that was more than I was ever making. So I went back and did that. And then the same thing kind of happened again.
You moved and you found out you were pregnant?
Yeah. I stopped.
So, you know, they figured out the cause of both of those things.
I saw just a change and stuff. Chef Ricardo was, I don't know if this is going to offend anyone, but was way too good for that place. Mm-hmm. And they weren't letting him do the things he was capable of doing.
Yep.
So, you know, you start feeling like that way yourself too. And then you stop kind of caring sometimes. And so I left, and I was going to take another month off because baby daddy was making enough money to take care of us. And then I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to apply to this ad I saw for a line cook in Golden Hill. And that ended up being Counterpoint. And then when I got there, I found out that the chef and the sous chef were both going to be leaving within a month. And they're like, oh, you have like management.
Isn't that experience. A nice surprise? When
I was just like, whoa, okay. I just came here to be a line cook, and they're like, well, you have some management. You can do orders and shit. What do you think about taking over this kitchen? And I was just like, whoa, that's not why I just got hired as a line cook. And I was thinking, like, fuck it. I might never get this opportunity. It's way too premature in my career. And then I was like, fuck it. I'm going to prove it. I can do this. I've done all this stuff already. What more could it be? And I was in for it. It was being a chef is, besides being a mother, is probably the hardest job that I've ever had in my life or I've ever seen someone do. Like mm-hmm. there's just, I mean, my family's over because of that job. I was working every night. And he was alone with her all the time, and it drew him away from me. And you know, the whole story happens, and he meets someone else, and now we're separated. And I ended up at the High Dive. I had a falling out with some issues at work, and I was trying to make the place right for my team, and it didn't happen. So I had to leave from there, and then this High Dive thing like landed in my lap, and I was like, I want my own kitchen again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dive bar. It's a different type of cuisine, so it wasn't what I was doing at Counterpoint, and I wasn't used to it. But I know that kind of food is the food that I eat all the time.
Yep.
Like, why wouldn't you want to do that? I like doing like all the foams and stuff, and that stuff's just not me. I tried to do it at some dinners, and I was just like, what am I doing? What the hell am I doing? This is not what I do, and I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to do what I'm good at, and that's making comfort food and making shit that I like to eat when I grew up.
Rosie's not a member of the Tweezer Mafia.
I don't even know how to use those things. I don't have to pluck my eyebrows, so I'm good. but ended up at the High Dive, and that was... This is the hardest job I've ever had in my life. The one thing I love about it is my daughter can come in. It's a family-owned place. A female owns it, and she's the coolest fucking chick in the world. I love her. The manager of the bar is female. Like, everyone, all the management is all women, and you could think that would be a fucking nightmare, but it's not. It fucking works great.
But on the side, like the family side of it, mm-hmm. it's probably a much more forgiving atmosphere because of that.
Yeah, yeah,
it really is. And that's not to say that there aren't some really terrific and good male GMs and managers mm-hmm. and all that, but our brains don't immediately run to that.
Yeah, yeah.
And women tend to be more designed that way.
I feel like we can do fucking anything, and it's so crazy to me that there's not more women in this industry, because the women that I know that are in this industry are like some of the strongest people that I know.
And
I'm
just like, why do you think that is? Why do you think that the industry?
I don't know what it is. Like, they say we go through a lot more pain physically, and I don't know if that's a part of it, but I feel like it's more like women. I don't know. I can't give up on this place. If I was anyone else, they would have not been here. Like, I see something, there's a future, and I have a goal, and it has to be there before I would ever think about leaving that place. And I feel like a lot of women feel that way, the same way. They have to see it through. They have to make sure it fucking works.
Well, and we've kind of explored this before on the Marie and Karen episode. It's a boys' club.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is.
And fortunately, a lot of the really chauvinistic old boys are getting out of the kitchens because they're getting too fucking old to be in there,
yeah.
And they're retiring. And guys my age are really
into Purple Rain.
Yeah, are really into Purple Rain. Are really kind of the last group of guys who came up under that old system.
Mm-hmm.
And that old system, it was horribly flawed and it was horribly wrong, but there's a lot of, Rosie, you've worked Ricardo's old school.
Yep.
There's a lot about that old system that actually makes you a better cook and it makes you a better chef because the discipline was pretty rigid. The perfecting the craft was pretty rigid.
Yeah.
The thoughts on male-female relationships and family relationships are completely fucked up. But other than that, it was a generation where they wanted your heart, they wanted your soul, they wanted your body. There was nothing about the day-to-day life other than their restaurants that they gave a shit about.
Yeah.
And we've lost a lot of that.
Yeah. It's crazy because I've been hanging out with a few female chefs, like, mm-hmm. just once a week, you know, Letty and Ami and Megan, and it's like we don't complain about work in front of men. Like, it's so weird, but we'll like go to a bar and we'll just share our horror stories, and it's just like, wait, we're all doing the same fucking thing,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, we're running a kitchen of these 10 different dudes at once that are usually probably high or drunk or hungover. And the complaining, and running a kitchen is fucking hard. It is fucking hard because you're like mom to everyone, and it's,
yep.
like then I go home and I'm mom to the 4-year-old that's crazy too.
Well, you know,
also doesn't listen to me.
But it's cool being a mom to the 4-year-old. You look at the 29-year-old and you go, why the fuck am I being your mom?
Yeah, what the fuck?
What is
were
wrong
you thinking?
With you?
So,
oh, my God.
It's funny. We're trying to take the food at the High Dive to the next level without getting rid of that, like, dive bar. Like, why can't you go somewhere and have a really good beer? Because we have some of the best beer in town. And then have, a bomb-ass burger or a bomb-ass sandwich.
It's,
like,
it's that kind of thought,
mm-hmm.
that kind of really drew me to here.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason that we can't do, and with budgetary concerns and it being a show menu and all that, that we can't do really nice food here.
Yeah.
There's no reason.
There's no reason.
And it can be innovative without being tweezered or foamed or any of that shit that I think is a lot of fun to do, but I can't sell here.
Yeah, right.
So I have to think more, okay, how am I going to make this hamburger truly unique?
Yeah, and one thing that I like to do is I like to turn the turd into gold. Like, I'm really good at making cheap ingredients taste,
mm-hmm.
really good. And I feel like with this place, like, dude, I can do so much,
yeah.
really cool shit. And we're, like, in the process of changing our menu. And we've had our employment issues, losing people, getting new people. The new guys are training the newer guys because we're short staffed. And we're open all day long.
Right.
Like, we're open from 9 a.m. to 12 at night and 8 a.m. on the weekends. And so
I
there's
didn't
no
realize you guys opened that early.
Yeah, so there's no time for me to, like, go into a kitchen with nobody in there,
yeah.
and, like, just be creative. Like, it's been one of the hardest parts for me, but now I'm getting people in the kitchen that are creative also, so it's nice to have that to, like, bounce back on, you know.
Well, you hear all the noise coming from my kitchen,
dude. I was staring into your kitchen and I was like, oh.
Yeah. But all that noise, this is my favorite time to work.
Yep.
Back there.
Me too,
because there's
too.
Nobody there. I can just go back, make my notes,
turn your own music on,
yep.
and just fucking create shit.
not have to hear about it when I'm playing hair metal back there from my staff,
yeah.
who all listens to fucking hip-hop.
Oh, man, mine's emo music. They hate it.
Well, someone has been sitting there quietly smiling at all this.
Where is the High Dive?
The High Dive is on Marina Boulevard, like in Bay,
oh,
Park,
okay.
area,
yeah,
like
I
right across from, like, Fiesta Island.
You can actually see it from
the freeway.
The 5.
Yeah.
I go to church right over there.
Nice.
That's, that's where I thought it was there.
See, guys, there is another person here. Becky, we are turning our thoughts to you right now.
You guys are having a great conversation.
Well,
I figured, why interrupt?
So tell us a little bit about your story. How did you get to what you're doing now? And because here's what I know about you. I know that you're married to a comedian. Mm-hmm. I know that you're a mom. Mm-hmm. I know that you have a fairly terrible addiction to jazzercise.
It's not terrible at all.
It's a terrible addiction. Anybody that doesn't exercise called jazzercise, that's got to be an addiction. Oh. Just by the name alone.
Is that from the 80s?
Jazzercise.
It started before that. But I have been jazzercising for 10 years now.
Wow.
10 years.
See? An addiction.
It is. It really is an addiction. It's a great one, though.
I wish I was addicted to something like that, where I knew my ass would look good
all the time. All you got to do is go once or twice, and you will be addicted. If you like music.
Yeah. Same thing with heroin.
Just once.
Do that once or twice.
Yeah, but you'll get skinny next thing for you know. You'll get skinny for a good reason, not a bad reason.
And Rosie, you have a full set of teeth, and I'd hate for you to lose that. And that's one of the things heroin does. But go ahead, Beck. Tell us a little bit of your story. Are you originally, is it Eric that's from Texas, or are you from Texas?
Eric is from Texas. I am a born and bred San Diegan.
Wow.
I was born at Paradise Valley Hospital. I've never lived anywhere else.
That's where my daughter was.
No kidding. You really don't meet out here. You really don't meet, and you're from San Diego,
yep,
too.
Born and raised, too.
Yeah,
I grew up in National City.
I was born at Paradise Valley Hospital and grew up in Spring Valley, so.
Okay, so.
I met my first husband when I was 17 and ended up getting married young, 20. Had my first kid 6 days before my 21st birthday. And
wow.
I had worked at the Salk Institute when I was younger, when I was 18, actually, but I got injured, so I ended up leaving and then kind of had a few odd jobs, but then ended up being a stay-at-home mom after I had my second son. And then I had my daughter when I was 26, and I have this friend, Janelle. I met her through my brother-in-law. She is a manager at the Comedy Store. Mm-hmm. And one day she approached me as a stay-at-home mom with all of her other girlfriends and said, hey, my friend Robert is a comedian, and he's opening his own comedy club, and he needs waitresses, but he needs waitresses that can work for free. So we were just a group of stay-at-home moms, and we were like, oh, yeah, our husbands all work during the day, and then
what's really funny is that he continues with that business model today. I really kind of need you to work for free.
We were just tips only. Everyone volunteered. It was so many comedians from the Comedy Store, like, mm-hmm. Everyone volunteered. All the door people, they were all comedians. The waitresses were the only staff that was not comedians. Like Joe Charles was a bartender.
Right.
Eric Knowles was the bartender. Kim Thompson was the door person. Gordon Downs used to be at the original Madhouse.
Was this the one in
Sereno
in back
Valley.
Of the Chinese in the yep. Chinese restaurant?
Back of the Chinese restaurant.
Does it just make you funny to work at a comedian? Like,
it helps.
It made me drunk is really what it made me. It was.
It helps that too.
So our husbands would go to work during the day, and then a group of, these were my girlfriends, and we were all had children the same age. They all went to the same like elementary school. We would carpool to work and end up drinking way too much, and I ended up having an affair with my now husband, which is how my life got here. I got divorced from my first husband and stayed with Eric. And kept working. Robert, the first Madhouse got shut down, and he ended up making a deal with the guys over at the Comedy Palace and was managing the comedy portion and actually making it a comedy club at night instead of just having a comedy night, you know, on Thursdays and Fridays.
That side room where the comedy club is at the Palace, was that just part of the restaurant when it originally opened?
That was just the restaurant. Before Robert took over, I think they only did comedy on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights.
And the divider wall wasn't there, right?
Yes.
Oh, it was?
It was. That was a separate room. It used to be like an office and all sorts of stuff. There used to be another set of doors, and they've done a lot of reconstruction of the place over the last 7 years that I know of. But Robert ended up taking over there and got rid of all of the staff and kept me, Carrie Poole, who is a waitress here at Madhouse. I actually trained her. She started working for Robert before she was even 21.
This is like the secret history of San Diego comedy.
Yeah. Carrie, this is, and I'm kidding, but Carrie, I often tell Robert, it was part of his graphic arts deal. Carrie's dad did all of the, he did the early website design, he did the the logos and all that. And it was like when he dropped that off, he dropped Carrie off as well and went, okay, go.
Pretty much.
Go play.
They were like, this is Rex's daughter and you need to train her. And my friend who was the manager and the head waitress at the time was like, she's not even 21. She shouldn't be working here. And Robert was just like, nope. She turned 21 like 2 weeks later or
right.
something like that. It was just a short period of time.
You know, the fortunate thing about that was is Carrie's got, she's just so sweet. She's an incredibly sweet human being. And that's, it's one of those things where anything about this industry, I can teach you how to do this. I can't teach you to want to do this. And she wants to do it.
She's mm-hmm. the only waitress. I can tell you as a door guy here, she's the only waitress that people come up and go, please sit us in Carrie's section.
Yep.
That's how good she is.
That's awesome.
And even after this place opened, she was so nice to George and Tony over at the Palace mm-hmm. that she would work like one night here and then go the next night over at the Palace because she didn't want to leave them short-staffed when Robert opened. Because I was pregnant. So I worked at the Palace. I got pregnant with Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And when I was 7 months pregnant, that was October of 2011. That mm-hmm. was the month before Robert opened here. And so Eric quit his job as a bartender at the Palace. I stopped working because I was too pregnant, and waitressing hardcore at 7 months is terrible.
Yeah.
So we came here and we spent all our time cleaning and helping. I cleaned, wiped all of the tables and chairs, like organized stuff, picked where I was supposed to be the head waitress here.
Mm-hmm.
Robert had, you know, told me figure out where you want your waitress stations and how it's supposed to be and all of that. And then they opened and I ended up sleeping here pretty much every night, like during shows and stuff, because I was 8 and 9 months pregnant. People would ask Eric every day, what would happen if Becky gave birth right at Madhouse? Because I was here all the time. Mm-hmm. And people would like think, isn't it weird to have like a 9 month pregnant woman sitting at the bar? And I'm like, who cares?
Right.
It's a comedy club. Like, why does it matter? In fact, the day that we were released from the hospital when Lincoln was born, we brought Lincoln here. I have a picture of him sitting underneath the bar in his car seat at 2 days old. And then he spent the first 2 years of his life here just about every night.
Mm-hmm.
I'd leave him in his infant carrier, and I'd stand outside and cover him with a blanket and just hang out outside, and he would sleep the whole night in his infant carrier while Eric bartended and did shows, because he was on like every weekend just mm-hmm. about. So
and my kid both. Comes with me to work.
Yeah. Like he's coming tonight. Oh no, he's not. I left him at home. He was supposed to come tonight and do the open mic. He's 4 years old and does stand up comedy because he's been in a comedy club.
He's performed on this stage.
He did. He kind of choked. He got scared because he had never been on this stage at night with an audience before. Mm-hmm. So he got real nervous, and he said he was a little scared, but.
Yeah, because he started down the stairs and then ran back to mom and mm-hmm. then ran back onto the stage.
Yeah, he kind of threw a little fit. He made me carry him all the way to the stairs with his arms crossed, and he had told me he wanted to go on, and Eric was like, you know, I don't want to be a pageant dad. That's pretty
yeah.
much.
It's not the worst meltdown I've seen on that stage.
No, not by far. By far. We had a guy last weekend that melted down faster than that.
But no, it's you see him on at the Palace stage, and he does the open mic pretty much every week. You see him.
He does the open mic often. I've had him do guest spots. He's open for Eric. He did a show downtown outside at the Yard. Mm-hmm. Eric was doing a show for Kabu in between bands, and Lincoln went up and did a couple of jokes, and that was the first time he had ever gone on stage and done jokes. It was outdoors
awesome.
With a bunch of people around. He has it in him for sure. That kid is an entertainer.
He?
He's four.
That's awesome.
Yep. He is totally all about it.
You are in for a long life.
Oh my God. My kid's four too.
Lincoln is very unique, that child. He's lucky to have his dad home with him all the time. It's something that's completely different because I have three older kids.
Right.
And my ex-husband works a regular job during the day, so I was home with the kids all day, take them to school, do all the homework.
Yeah.
He would just come home for dinner, you know, just a regular life. And now Eric's home all the time, you know, and so Lincoln has this special, unique relationship with his dad where he plays a lot. So when Eric goes out of town, when he went to Africa and stuff for 3 weeks, Lincoln had like all this pent up energy because I don't wrestle with him the way his
right.
dad does, and I don't play ninjas and fight and do all sorts of stuff. So yeah, he's a special little kid. He's got a nice relationship with his dad.
That's awesome.
Well, that's cool. That is really cool.
So somehow I stumbled into being this waitress, and I've been working in comedy clubs since 2009.
And how long have you been back at the Palace?
I came back to the Palace in October of 2013.
Okay.
What are we in, 16? 14. 2014. So almost 2.5 years or 2 years. Something like that.
Because I started, I'm coming up, running up against my 3-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember you being here. You sure it wasn't the year before that?
Eric left being a bartender here. There was like a year gap where neither of us worked in a comedy club.
Okay. Yeah, because when I first started here, and I really kind of cut my teeth here, it was Misty and Kelly and Dave.
Yeah, Kelly and Dave came along after Eric was no longer
gotcha.
Here.
Gotcha. Okay.
Dave was always here, but Dave came along as a
Dave
bartender.
Dave has always been here.
It was after Eric ended up leaving and no longer working mm-hmm. the bar. Just circumstances, having too much access to alcohol. And it freed him up because
everything has a shelf life.
He had to deny a lot of gigs because he was supporting our family as a bartender. So people were like, hey, can you come to a Saturday show for $50? And he's like, no, I can't because I make $300 on that night. Like, I have to tend bar. And
yeah, once as Rosie said about taking the kitchen management job, once the family finances come into play, it causes you to not cut back on the fun stuff, but you have to make decisions based purely financially.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you turn down the $50 gig to make $200 more than that.
And he felt like a jerk doing that all the time to people. And, you know, he needs other opportunities. I'm glad that he's not, you know, connected to a club like that in that way anymore.
After a while, people will stop asking. You can only be turned down so many times.
Yeah.
And then there'll be, you know, you never want it to get called into question that we've asked him to be on this show 3 times. He's turned us down all 3 times. You never want them to think, A, he's got a problem with the show, or mm-hmm. B, he's not committed to it. Because those kind of rumors spread like wildfire, and it's probably best for his career that he's able to take those gigs now.
Yeah.
I think even on a larger level, though, for a comic, like when you're in those first early years and developing and being associated with a comedy club is very beneficial. And you ask, yes, it's like injecting heroin. Like you're just getting this pure concentrated comedy mm-hmm. constantly. But eventually you outgrow it, similar to outgrowing a kitchen or outgrowing. You need to transcend and have your own identity that is not just associated. You don't want to be Eric from the Madhouse or this person from the store. Eventually mm-hmm. you just want to be the comic Eric Knowles or...
The cool thing about Eric is he's had just about every comedy club in San Diego as his home club. The Comedy Store was his home club in mm-hmm. the early years of his career. And even before that, it was the Comedy Co-op. I don't know if you've ever heard mm-hmm. about the Comedy Co-op.
No.
It was just... Mark Whitney, he is back in San Diego doing some stuff. He actually does a one-man show, but he started a comedy cooperative.
I've actually
where he
been
just,
on a card with Mark before.
Okay, where he just rented a garage, I believe, like in an industrial complex, mm-hmm. and he used it as his office. And then he put a stage in there, and they had a bunch of folding chairs, and it was bring your own beverages, bring whatever you want, and people would just come and hang out, and it was a cooperative.
Wow.
And even like...
Very, very grassroots.
Natasha Leggero, is that how you say her last name?
Yes.
She was there. Like, she did stuff at the co-op, and that was even before. He actually started at Winston's. Winston's, the co-op, the Comedy Store, and then the Comedy Palace and Madhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those have been, like, his home clubs. He's one of the unique guys here in San Diego that has the opportunity to say that pretty much every comedy club, except for ACC, has been his home club.
And you know what? The except for ACC is a more common trait than...
Oh, yeah.
Matt, you've actually been on the ACC stage.
Only for the open mic.
Yeah.
Lincoln's been to ACC.
I have never... I don't even know where the ACC is.
Really?
Oh, really? You should go see it.
You should go to the open mic.
I should.
But unfortunately, absolutely, it's just down to once a month now. So it,
really?
Yes.
Oh wow.
Mm. Yes. But the Madhouse has a open mic 7 nights a week. You guys can come on out and check us out anytime. It's free. We'd love to see you.
No, I had no idea that they had lowered that. Well, the Comedy Palace open mic is tonight. I'll be working, bartending, and serving that. So feel free to come out.
Of course you will. Tuesday is Maddie's open mic grind day. You hit five?
No, Tuesday I care. I'm a caregiver for another comic, Vince D'Amico, who is he's handicapped, disabled, and he hosts the mic here at the Madhouse every Tuesday.
So you'll be back later on tonight.
I'll be back later on tonight. What usually we're able to do is hit the Comedy Palace early, and then boogie on over here and be in time here.
But when you weren't with Vince, you were doing four?
I was doing four, yes.
On Tuesdays?
Yes.
What four are there on Tuesdays?
Java Joe's, which is a mixed mic coffee shop in
University Heights?
On Adams Avenue.
Yes, on Adams.
Yes, it's down from Small Bar.
Yes. I would do that. Oh, see, now I'm trying to...
Stumped him.
You stumped me. No, Lestat's is on Monday.
Oh.
I think I would only hit three, and I think the four was just happened to catch a lucky break that there was just some weird fourth mic that I did. But three was usually for Tuesday.
I know there's Salty Frog now on Tuesday nights.
Yes, that's right. But the first and third Tuesday?
Oh, okay. I have no idea.
Well, this is not interesting to anybody.
Chops?
Except for you, probably.
Yes, and we are, we're at 36 minutes, sir.
36? Oh, my God. We've gone over time.
We've gone over time.
Time to hoist. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Cheers.
Ah.
Oh, tastes like my early 20s.
Okay, one of the things I want to cover today... it's not often that I come in with an agenda, but I want to get the perspective of somebody who works in a place that's kind of like my gig here, where it's not fine dining. There's a lot of other, like the High Dive, there's a lot of other shit going on.
Yeah.
You guys have a pool table?
No, we have pinball machines that are actually really
okay.
Cool.
But the primary thing is it's a dive bar.
Yeah.
And Becky works at a comedy club. And that's, you know, it's working at a comedy club and a dive bar. And there's something to focus on other than the food.
Mm-hmm.
I've done fine dining. I know you've done fine dining. I am having a real problem over the last couple of years with our guests. I think we are at a time where there is an unprecedented amount of rudeness in the people who go out and the way they treat the service industry. I think that expectations of what goes along with a great night out have expanded sometimes beyond the capabilities of what we're trying to do. This is going to show my age, but as a kid, if I would have gone into a restaurant and said, I don't want this sauce, I want this starch, and build my own meal from the menu, my parents would have been mortified, absolutely mortified, and we probably would have gotten up and left. I don't know where it came to the point where everybody feels they can that's okay to do that. Am I getting this completely wrong? Have I veered off into being the grumpy old man that I don't want to be?
Well, yes, but...
Shut up.
I think we all live in our dream world is where no one asks for anything except for how we want to make it. And I think at the High Dive, it's a neighborhood spot. Like for us... And people ask, that's every ticket has red on it.
Well, no.
If you know what that means, that means that there's modifications.
Worried about the modifications. You can come in with any kind of weird allergy. You can come in with any kind of weird, I don't want gluten in this. It's more the way that they ask for it. Like there's the, they have this, I'm the customer and I have this divine right.
Entitlement.
It really is an entitled crowd. And we've talked on this program. I can't believe I'm referring to this as this program.
This program. Now. This fine program.
We're 10 episodes in, so we're legit.
Thanks to listeners like you.
Thank you. It sounds like QED now, or like public television.
Yep.
This program, thanks to viewers like you. But it's just, I don't know where it comes from. I think there's a decided lack of manners anymore. How often do you get thank yous, Becky?
The people are pretty nice. It kind of depends on the audience. I mean, maybe the show, I don't...
Yeah. You don't censor yourself. I know exactly what you're getting at. Just say it. Just say it. Just say it.
It depends on the show.
It really does depend on the show. Like, this next week, I hate to say it, but I've refused to work the P-Man show at the Palace.
That's a different crowd. That's a very different crowd.
And I don't know. Actually, that's more of a lack of accommodations by the management that I've refused. It's really not even the audience.
Are they in the back room again?
Yeah. There's a lot of things.
That show's too big to be in the back room.
It is too big to be in the back room, which makes people cranky. And when we're really busy, when we get sat all at once, and everyone thinks that they should have their drink immediately, especially when they go back to the bar and you tell them, hey, there's a 2-item minimum at the table. You really need to go take a seat. You know, the fastest way for you to get your drink is to take a seat and get an order from your waitress. So just sit down and... The second show really is where
we have that happen here too.
I'm always shocked how many people are offended by that.
Yeah,
they're very offended by that.
People get offended so much by the dumbest shit.
I ask that for people to stand outside on Saturday's second show. They came into the bar while the first show was going on. It was a large group of people, and I said, "Hey, you guys should go outside and stand in line." And they were like, no, 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 no. We want to get a drink. We want to get a drink. And the management ended up going, okay, you guys can get a drink. But when everyone gets their drink at the bar because they feel that they should have it right now because they're here, then it makes our job so much more difficult. And then we get talked to because we really need to get that second item from them and we need to –
It's like 20 trains coming into the station at once.
Absolutely.
You need a conductor that's going to guide everything.
You know, one of the nice things that we have here on weekends is that we open the doors an hour and a half ahead. So we, on the first show at least, we deflect a lot of that huge rush.
Absolutely.
Second show is still a shit show because the lights, we get them in, we get them seated as quickly as possible. The lights go down and the printer kicks
12 minutes
off.
I beat
printer
my record.
Lights off.
See,
what's that?
Beat my record 12 minutes last week.
The printer lights up and doesn't stop for 10, 15 minutes.
At Pechanga, so I went to Pechanga with Eric, and he did shows there featuring For Will See a whole weekend, and I ended up being able to go to one night of shows. And I saw the way that they ran their room with two shows. Mm-hmm. They only had three waitresses for the whole showroom, which was a large showroom.
Wow.
And they were so efficient, but what it was is the person who sat, the customers, sat them in such a slow manner that it made it to where the waitresses could get there.
Oh. Yep.
And I think that a lot of comedy clubs don't want to pay extra for the few extra minutes, you know, to have the show go a little bit longer. But I really think there should be a larger gap between shows so the patrons have the opportunity to come in and actually get their drink before the lights go down and before the MC goes up.
We try to flip the room here in 15 minutes. Now, that's 15 minutes whether the show ends at 9:20, which gives us plenty of time and gives us a buffer, or the show ends at 9:35, and then we're starting the second show late, which drives me absolutely insane. But it's a mad scramble, especially when we're sold out, to flip the room in 15 minutes, reset, reload.
You guys are lucky because you have tabletops that you just wipe down. We have to flip cloths and
do
tablecloths and all sorts of crazy stuff.
But I think that there is, and I don't know what has caused it, but there's just a fundamental lack of manners.
I know. me, I think it's we're a generation, my generation, I'm 36 this year, and younger, we weren't necessarily raised by our parents. We were raised, say, in daycare mm-hmm. or in preschool and pre-K and kindergarten and this, that, and the other thing. And I think kind of a lack of manners being dispensed by parents because they were too busy going to work, making it to where, like, my mom didn't necessarily have to work, but we sacrificed a lot so my mom didn't have to work. Whereas mm-hmm. most families where mom and dad worked, kids did AM, PM, before school, after school. Like, yeah. I was lucky. I was raised in a family where my mom got to stay home.
But do you think that if it is a generational thing, then the younger generation has affected the older generation?
Absolutely.
Because the older, I mean, I'm going...
Social media, entertainment on television, especially the self-centeredness of reality TV and me, 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 me. Like, we've become a much more self-centered society.
Well, you know, and part of the problem with this is my generation.
Yes.
Because I am the youngest in my family. My mom and dad were kids of the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
My two older brothers was 7 and 8 years older than I am. I lived under kind of my father's draconian rule, where you come in the house, you go in. If my parents had people in the house, you go in, you say hello to all the adults. You say Mr. and Mrs. to some of my parents' friends. I'm 50 years old. I still address as Mr. or Mrs. because that's the way it's supposed to be. Please, thank you. You hold doors for ladies and all that. Well, kids my age remember all that. And when we started having kids, they started going, well, I'm not going to impose all those rules on my kids. And it turned into
like a domino.
Your generation.
Mm-hmm.
And what little rules you guys had, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but it seems like it's had a trickle-down effect.
Absolutely.
To where their kids are going, well, I'm not going to have all those rules, which, you know, I grew up in the parental Third Reich. I mean, I had to be in the house at 10 o'clock in high school. And my father's words every time I walked out of the house was, you may be earlier, you will not be later.
That sounds like my upbringing.
Yeah, and it's like, and I think you're right. It's the entertainment.
So then it was, though, that maybe those rules were the correct rules, but they weren't imposed correctly because your generation then said, I don't like those rules.
Right.
I'm going to change them. Becky and my generation and Rose's have said, oh, okay, well, we don't like those rules.
Right.
So it's not necessarily the rules, but it's just the
way they were imposed. You know, I don't hear a lot of please and thank you. And I think the way people treat, part of the reason that I've become more understanding with the front of the house after years and years of basically loathing you fuckers is that you're my customer, Becky.
Mm-hmm.
I see you every day. I have a relationship with you every day. If you're working at the club that I'm working at, you have a whole new group of rude dickheads that you have to see every day.
And you have to smile at them.
Yeah.
And be nice. There was one lady who looked at me. I walked past her table and I went to drop her check. And she just looked at me and she said, you could take those plates. And I just kind of looked at her and went, I will, thank you. And, like, I have to be nice.
Oh, man, that's why I'm in the back of the house.
And as I walked past again, I kind of gave her a stern eye. I gave her a stern mother eye. And then she wrote on my check, nice attitude. And it's like, excuse me, like, I was smiling and all happily
yet.
With you. And
oh, no, the hood comes out when someone gets weird like that with me.
I've said it before, and I've said it my entire career. I have to work in the back because it's important to me to hate the same group of people every day. Out front, you have to learn how to hate new people every day, and I simply don't have time for that.
You have to learn to love people in spite of their flaws.
Yeah.
That's
you know what I love about the high dive? It's funny because we actually like love everyone in the front of the house. But you know, like when everyone gets stressed, there's like everyone has their bitchiness. So you know, mm-hmm. maybe some of the waitresses do. And then when we were on the line and we have tickets all the way down, we get our attitudes, and then like they butt heads, and then when the rush is over, we're fucking cool again. Like we're good. We're shaking hands. That was fucking awesome, guys. You did a great job.
There is a lot of stuff that happens in the heat of the moment.
Yep.
That and you know,
you gotta just not take it personally.
I think a really good crew doesn't take that personally, and the people who do take that personally normally get pushed out by the rest of the crew.
Yeah. Yep. You can't.
He swore at me.
None of this crying shit.
he swore at me, and the cooks go, he swears at us all the fucking time.
That's just how he talks. Oh my God.
I have a good relationship with Mario. If I mess something up, I just smile real nice. If Mario loves me, he'll take my mess up. But other people, I usually have to coax him. Be like, they really did. It was an accident. It totally got accidentally dropped at the wrong table. I'm so sorry.
That's one of those things, too, where it's just like, ooh, you're lucky that I like you and this is not happening.
That's pretty much what he says every time.
Well, forgot to ring in a burger. Oh.
Well, one of the things that I have to...
I need that rush.
One of the things I had to change about my approach to it was I was the first guy to be standing there with the ticket in my hand, arguing back and forth, going, well, why the fuck did you put it on the wrong table? This is the way you rang this in. And that
burger's just not going to make it stop. Yeah.
It's usually the runner's fault.
The entire process.
Yeah.
And I've had to, now I've taken kind of the, when my guys are doing that, I was like, shut up and remake the burger. This isn't solving anything.
Nope. Customers still waiting.
All this is
They're
doing
still...
is making you feel
I find myself doing the same thing, too.
I think Yelp is another reason why. People have been empowered with this fact that everything that they think matters.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some of the worst opinions and the worst things that I have seen on Yelp reviews. It's
Yelp
terrible.
Is, as a person outside of the business, Yelp is universally hated by every single guest we've
who
had.
Who are all these people? It's like, I feel like everyone hates it, but they still fucking use it. Like, they're
I mean,
because everyone wants their opinion to matter. They want, like I was offended by this.
Everyone I know hates Yelp. And I'm like, well, who's using it then?
I mean, do real people
like
that
it? Aren't in the food service industry are the ones that are using Yelp.
The only thing I've ever used Yelp for was to find an address to a restaurant or their hours or something.
It's the Brian Simpson joke. Remember when, in the 90s, when you had a bad sandwich, all you could do is shut the fuck up about it?
Seriously, that's the thing, is people think that their opinion about everything matters.
Sebastian Maniscalco does that as well. He was like, you know, when I was growing up, you had something and you went, salmon sucks, let's go. And that was the end of it. He's like, you don't go home and get on your computer.
Oh, God, and people will leave paragraphs and long,
and,
long
and
things.
And there's the worst ones, too, that don't say anything. It was gross.
What like, really bothers me is if that you're that pissed off about it,
talk to them.
Tell me about it so I can fix it before you have time to chew on it and get madder about it.
Absolutely, and I think that's the problem, is people no longer want to address these situations. They just want to be outraged about something. And if you really didn't like the brownie or you think the Jack and Coke was terrible, please tell me, because I absolutely will make you another Jack and Coke. I'll make it right in front of you at the table if necessary.
My Jack and Coke was terrible. I last Saturday night I had several terrible Jack and Cokes.
We don't even argue. That's the thing, is we don't even argue with people. We only have a certain amount of time. So if you tell me that you don't like your drink, I'll leave it there on the table for you or someone else to drink, and I'll bring you another one.
That's how it is.
I don't have
too.
Time to it's argue, like, and it's totally fine. I'd way rather you be happy. Just let me know that you're dissatisfied with something I've given you.
We
don't yell about it later.
Matt and his doorman ilk had to talk to a woman one night who was on her cell phone. She apparently buys and sells things on either eBay or some internet-based site. And she's like, well, I had to, I said, ma'am, the reason we're asking you to leave is because your continued cell phone use. Well, I had a sale come through on my cell phone. What am I supposed to do, miss the sale?
Get up and walk
I
out.
I said, no, ma'am, you could just walk out and take. She's like, I have to respond right immediately. You want me to miss the sale? And it was all I could do to go, lady, I don't give a fuck about your business. If your business is so time sensitive, then why did you come to a place where you're not allowed to use your cell phone?
Or sit in the back.
And then she goes, well, I live downtown. And I live in Mission Valley. Are we just saying things now?
Well, then it takes you less time to get home.
I live near IKEA. But you see people, Matt is, it may be completely false, but he is overwhelmingly pleasant and polite at the door.
Oh, fake as shit.
You
deserve an Oscar.
You strip away this veneer that is a black pool of hate on the inside of him. But even when he's very polite and he's very personable. Your parents did a good job at least teaching you how to fake it.
Thank you.
You wouldn't believe the looks, the non-acknowledgement. He's like, hey, good evening, everyone. I need to see everybody's IDs. Not a word spoken. Show him the IDs.
He'll love the middle-aged men who act like, I'm so old, I didn't even acknowledge, like, you couldn't possibly be talking to me.
Right.
Even though I said, hello, everyone.
Right.
And I'd like to see I'm 62, ID. So there's no...
62 or not, sir, I need to see your ID.
Yeah. And people don't understand, and it's like... People just, there's a lack of understanding of things that businesses have to do. In order for us to be covered, we have to ID every single person that walks through the door. That way, if a phony ID pops up on the radar or Vice comes in, which they are prone to do.
Yeah. I served Vice once at the original Madhouse.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
But as long as we have these safeguards in place, they come in, they write up their little report, they go away, and everybody goes home happy. And people just get, oh, I can't believe you're asking me for your ID. We're asking everybody for their ID.
Don't feel special.
Yeah, we're not single. We're not airport security. Just show me your fucking driver's license.
Those people are also the worst comedy fans. They're always bad comedy audience members,
yeah.
Which is a very specific... Not only is it a, you know, oh, this is a good customer, it's also this is a good comedy audience member.
And absolutely.
They're never, if you give me a hard time with the ID, you're not going to enjoy the show.
Yeah.
Just go home. That's pretty much what we say about when we take an order from someone. If they're like super picky and really annoying about stuff, they're generally not going
to
be happy with
the show. You're
not here
to have a good
time. Yeah.
You know what? when I'm having a good time at a show or a concert or shit, even the ball game, I paid $13 for a terrible vodka cocktail the other night at the ball game. And I did it because I was at the ball game and you expect shit like that. And if I'm at a comedy club and I'm having a really good show, the service can be slow. It's fine. I'm having a good time.
See, now another thing I think that affects that attitude of the customer is
the show.
Not just the show, because we usually have good shows. Zach Miller really does book a good show. It's very, very rare that he has an opener or a feature that I'm not happy with. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big critic of comedy.
I wouldn't have guessed that from you.
Been around comedy for a lot of years now, so I'm, you know, it takes a lot to impress me, I guess. But is the cost of things, the fact that people aren't as wealthy as they used to be, we're actually poorer, it seems.
Yeah.
Usually the people that are really upset by the prices or the fact that they have to get two items generally don't tip and don't have as good of a time because they're stressed out, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys give away a lot of tickets at the Palace?
Yeah, I believe so. We have a few like newsletter, you know, mailing lists and stuff. And for most weekends, like we can do comps and stuff. So I don't.
Well, we end up doing a lot of comps here. Mm-hmm. We have a mailing list that allows for such things.
Yeah.
And even when, and I understand what you're saying, because even with people getting in for free and not
the
paying
worst.
The typical
free
charge.
Tickets? Oh.
They're terrible.
Free ticket people?
Oh.
Why do I have to get two drinks? Because you got in for free. And that's not the answer to give them, but you want to go because you got in for free.
Get a soda and some chicken wings. Like, pretend you're going out to dinner. You just get to get entertained the entire time you're out to dinner. You don't get pissed off when you walk into Ruby Tuesday and buy a soda and a burger for $12.
We get bad Yelp reviews when free ticket people can't get into the show that they want to get into. And it's like,
oh, wow.
It's like, look, you have the free tickets. You can come next weekend.
Come back
tomorrow. Should have come a little earlier, maybe. Yep. You know, maybe for a 7:30 show, you don't walk in the door at 7:40 when we're already sold out. Maybe you show up at 6:30 with your free tickets. But and then we'll try to move them to the 9:45 show. And the 9:45 show is always, and you know it, Becky, the late shows are always a roll of the dice. Mm-hmm. It's either the crowds are great or they're horrible.
They're drunk.
Yeah, they're drunk and they're loud and they're just...
They're rowdy.
Yeah.
You can tell the people that want the show to be about them. I actually had to kick a couple out. There's a lady that comes in all the time and I recognize her as a school teacher. I think she worked at my high school because I took her credit card and I recognized like the bank. It was Grossmont Union High School District Bank. And I was like, oh, what school did you work at? Because I recognize her face. But she comes in regularly. She's one of our VIP members. Mm-hmm. And she actually brought someone in with her Saturday night who got drunk. I'm guessing they drank beforehand. And
wanted to make the show about them.
Oh, my God. All my tables around me were like, I said, okay, I got to do last call. Can I get you guys anything else? And two of the three tables around them said, can you get this lady out of here?
Yep.
And it just everything was, and they always, I'm just trying to participate. Like everything.
I'm just having a good time. Uh-huh. I just want to have a good time. Why are you doing this? I want to have a good time.
Sorry.
Everything is about your, like, every personal opinion.
Bitter doorman, party of one. Your table's ready.
When you
have been working since January. This has happened since January.
That's it? Just since January? Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you have to remember, he came in pretty bitter.
I did.
Yeah, he was bitter ever long before he started working here.
Oh, my gosh. I've been called so many names by drunk customers. Yeah. When I was pregnant, Eric was bartending. I was pregnant with Lincoln, and we had a party bus come in, and there was this really drunk guy, and apparently drunk guys do not like pregnant waitresses at all. I got the worst tips when I was pregnant. It was terrible. Oh. But he ends up going back to the bar to get a drink because I had told him he needed to be quiet. And I'm really, really sweet. You know, sir, I really need you to keep it down. Real sweet. And he went back to the bar and got a drink and told Eric, he was like, here's $20 for you. Don't give any to that fucking bitch. And Eric looked at him and I was standing right there and I was like, what? Eric hands me the 20 and he said, that fucking bitch is my pregnant girlfriend. And the last time Eric had to jump behind the bar to help me because we had a crazy group come in and our bartender had left and mm-hmm. Eric was there. Drunk guy called me a bitch again. And I apparently when I work with my husband, I don't know what it is, the vibe that gets put out, but drunk guys hate me.
Well, all right, guys. We have push this to the time limit that we are comfortable going to.
I feel bad for Rosie. This ended up becoming a comedy audience bitch session. And
well, Rosie was figured prominently in the first part of the show.
Oh, yes, while I was securing the perimeter.
Yes. we had to lock the door to keep the riffraff out, except for the riffraff that's seated around this table. Guys, what we like to do is we like to help you guys boost your own social media following. I don't know if we can do that with you.
You Beck. Ain't got nothing from me.
Nothing from you.
Eric Knowles. Check out Eric Knowles' website.
if you want to help Becky and you want to follow Becky, follow her husband.
Eric Knowles on Twitter. So ERIKKNOWLES, like Beyonce.
Like Beyonce?
Like Beyonce.
Wow.
Knowles.
I'm going to I have to call him that now. That's what he said. Eric, like Beyonce.
That's the easiest way to explain to someone how to spell her last name is like Beyonce. Because, well, at least females, they know how to spell Beyonce's last name. Men don't get it all that.
And I do want to tell you that this is kind of a secondhand compliment, but your husband is one of my favorite comedians in town.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear.
I am a big Eric Knowles fan. And he is appearing everywhere anymore, it seems like. He's always working.
He is. Tomorrow night, he'll be double booking it up at Mike's Barbecue in Escondido and then at The Wood in PB.
Nice.
Oh, he's at The Wood tomorrow night?
Mm-hmm.
The Wood's a great show.
Great
yes,
show.
Yes, it is. It's one of my favorite shows.
Good place.
Oh, pardon me. Rosie?
So we have our High Dive Instagram at High Dive SD. And then my personal Instagram is Zana Chef, Zana. And then I have Snapchat, but no one wants to see what I do all day. So.
And you, does High Dive have a Twitter?
No, we don't do Twitter.
Does it have a Facebook?
Facebook, we do Facebook.
What's
and
that?
And it's just.
Is it just High Dive?
High Dive, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and we do this really cool dinner once a month called Chicks for Beer. It goes for it's women only, and all the money goes to charity to Susan G. Komen for the cure.
The people putting it on are women only, or the guests?
The guests are women, only. Yeah, we're actually gonna start doing some collaboration dinners. There's one coming up in June that's gonna be really cool.
Excellent. When are we gonna do something together?
Let's do it. Let's do it. It'll be number four for us.
Well,
you
us,
did the last one here
yeah.
at the Madhouse.
Yeah.
I participated in that
yep,
one.
The Stone Dinner. Mm, and yeah, we're good. Actually talking about doing a culinary event once a month.
That'd be fun.
We are. We're going to do Five Chef Society 4 here. That one's already set for October, but it's a long time between here and October.
We were talking about beefsteak or something
yeah.
at the High Dive.
Oh, I would love to do a beefsteak.
Let's do it.
You know what a beefsteak is?
No clue.
Beefsteak is a meal where everybody dresses up, and some of them are black tie, and it's giant portions of food. Nobody has utensils. It is basically a big drunk meat fest. Like they'll take giant steaks and just take slices, and you sit there, and everybody wears either aprons or bibs, and you just it's really a cool look it up online.
My kind of food.
It's just they're called beefsteak, and they're a lot of people do them for charity fundraisers. They're 5 and 6 courses, and everything's served on big cutting boards. And
oh my goodness!
Yeah, it is definitely my kind of thing.
Let's do it.
Oh, I'd love to do that. I really would. And I'd love to do one here because we have the room to do it.
Yeah.
But we are we need to put something together, Rosie. And once we get our schedule a little more laid out for the culinary plus a show event. You will definitely be one of my first phone calls.
Awesome.
And, Maddie, where can you find us?
Let's see. You can find... wait, you ask me because you mess it up every time.
Every single week.
Every time. You can follow us on...
I don't know our Twitter handle.
You can follow us on Twitter at a shot and shot in a beer... No, shot in a beer pod.
Yep.
And also like our Facebook page.
Yes. Shot in a beer. You personally?
You can find me on Twitter at jmatthewbird and on Instagram at matthew_bird. I'll be performing here at the Madhouse next Monday, the 2nd.
Excellent.
Opening for Alex Hooper. He's the headlining comedy cluster. If you guys stop off at the door and mention the name of the podcast, we'll give you free tickets to come into the show. Looking forward to that. Alex Hooper from New Girl. You can see him on there. He's one of
Alex was on New Girl?
Alex is a recurring character on New Girl.
Wow.
Absolutely. And also...
And an odd little man.
Just an amazing human being. Just an amazing human being.
He really is. He's a great guy.
And then May 5th, which is a Thursday, I will be performing at The Bar in La Mesa. So
nice.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that.
Nice. You can find me on Twitter at... If you want to... see some of the culinary stuff, it's at Chef Sunbear. I also run Shot in a Beer Pod on Twitter. My Facebook is, you can find me on Facebook, and if you're listening to the show, you're already a friend of mine anyway. Let's be realistic. There ain't no strangers tuning into this. I don't have Instagram, I don't have Snapchat because I'm 50, and I'm, you know, if we could do this on a vinyl record, I would probably prefer that. But, ladies, it has been wonderful talking to you today. Thank you guys for coming. Maddie, thank you as always.
Thank you,
and
sir.
And we are out of here.
See you next time.
Last night I dreamt of flying over hillsides in the snow. And I drove down through the clouds to the valley there below. When the fields turned into parking lots, my freedom turned to dread. The ground rose up to greet me, and I jumped about a bit. You can fly, fly, fly off to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you'll lose. It seems there's always something trying to bring a good man down. I've no fear of falling, but I hate it in the ground. I'm searching through my soul for trying to find some extra change. That I knew everything till everything changed. Now I'm standing on an island that is singing into the sea. And all that I can do is just enjoy the scenery. Well, you can fly, fly, fly off to anywhere you choose. You can try, 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 but eventually you're doomed. They say I'm mad at sweet soft music just before.
You have been listening to Shot in a Beer. For information about the podcast, just search for Shot in a Beer on Facebook or find us on Twitter at Shot in a Beer Pod. Shot in a Beer is also a member of a Modern Professions family of podcasts. For other podcasts you might enjoy and information about live shows and how you can get involved, visit amodernprofession.com or check the network out on Twitter at amodernpro. Thank you for your continued support of Shot in a Beer.